Hi, everybody. Before we begin, I'd like to officially invite you to an exciting event that you've been hearing about for quite a long time, and the details have finally arrived. On April 6th, 2025, you are invited to a casual meet and greet with your podcast hosts, an in-person gathering for our listeners and society members at the first ever museum exhibit devoted to the classic Gen X album, Free to Be You and Me. And together we will attend the Free to Be You and Me sing-along, I just want to emphasize that, sing-along in the museum's theater, an event they've already held twice and it has sold out every time. Our generation knows how important this album was and they show up. The event is curated and hosted by the Eric Carle Museum of Picture Book Art in Amherst, Massachusetts. So if you've ever dreamed about a weekend in New England, this is your big chance. This is the Berkshires, that dreamy, bucolic, romantic getaway that you learned about by watching Cheers. If you'd like to join us in the Berkshires, here's what you can expect. A morning meet and greet with us, your PCPS podcast hosts, and a whole bunch of friends you haven't met yet. Some games and prizes, Free to Be You and Me trivia and bingo. If you want to study, just listen to our episode on Free to Be You and Me. You'll be the first readers to get a sneak peek at my new book, the sequel to Worldwide Crush, with book swag and advanced reader copies to win. We'll get a private guided tour of the Free to Be You and Me exhibit. And the ultimate pinnacle of the event, the Free to Be You and Me sing-along. So what do you need to do if you want to join us? Two steps. Step one. Buy your tickets for the sing-along at the museum website at carlemuseum.org. That's Carl with an E, museum.org. Step two, reserve your spot on the PCPS guest list by sending us an email or a DM. Then we'll send you an official invite so you can RSVP. You'll find all of this information in our weekly newsletter with links and also in our show notes. And keep your eye on our social media for the museum's Free to Be You and Me merch. I'm wearing my Free to Be You and Me t-shirt right now. If you're not able to join us on April 6th, we'll miss you. But the exhibit is ongoing. You can go right now if you want to. And it closes on April 6th. It's a beautiful spot, a beautiful museum, full of all the books you remember from when you were a child, plus this once-in-a-lifetime exhibit devoted to our generation's favorite album. If you have any questions, do not hesitate to reach out and ask. Thanks so much. We can't wait to see you, and please enjoy the show. And Edith kicked this guy's ass. She fought hard, and she outsmarted him. And you, as the viewer, you were so proud of her, and the audience felt like they got to know Edith a little bit better that day. And it elicited one of the biggest and loudest audience responses in the history of the show.
Hello world, there's a song that we're singing. Come on, get happy. A whole lot of loving is what we'll be bringing. We'll make you happy.
Welcome to the Pop Culture Preservation Society, the podcast for people born in the Big Wheel generation who thought angel dust was a candy that made you jump out of plate glass windows.
We believe our Gen X childhoods gave us unforgettable songs, stories, characters, and images. And if we don't talk about them, they'll disappear, like Marshall, Will, and Holly on a routine expedition.
And today, and next week, we're saving the very special episodes of our favorite television shows that tackle difficult, shocking, and often controversial topics that shook us then and that we still think about today.
I'm Carolyn.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Michelle. And we are your pop culture preservationists.
Before we begin, we'd like to be very clear about what's coming up so you can make an informed decision about whether or not this will be fun for you. The 70s and 80s provided us with copious amounts of well-intentioned wisdom about the most sensitive and traumatic social issues of the day. Drug addiction, eating disorders, suicide, sexual assault, child abuse, and more. For some of you listening, this wasn't just entertainment or a cautionary tale. It was real life. We understand that. But because of the often ham-handed way these topics were handled on television sitcoms, our discussion of these episodes will not be solemn or sensitive. It will probably be more in the realm of incredulous, or the real-life equivalent of the facepalm emoji. There will definitely be laughter. And if that's not comfortable for you, we totally get it. We're so sorry that happened to you, and you officially have a signed note from your doctor to skip this one. Big hugs from the three of us, and we will see you next week instead.
Hello, I'm Conrad Bain. Tonight on Different Strokes, we're starting a special two-part show on a very sensitive and important subject. Now, we urge families, children, and parents alike to watch both of these informative episodes and then to discuss the problem presented, which is of deep concern to all of us.
It's no question that television played a huge role in most of Generation X's lives. And for many of us, we felt like we were raised by the families who lived in our screen. The Cunninghams, the Ingalls, the Keatons, or even single dad Captain Steubing. We wanted to be part of those families. And regardless of our own family dynamics, we often look to these people and families and the situations they found themselves in as models. We held them up. And so when things got dicey or scary or shocking, we were paying attention. Mm-hmm. And the writers knew that, I believe. Mm-hmm. And we all know what I'm referring to here. The episodes of our favorite shows that dealt with very difficult or controversial social issues like drug abuse, suicide, eating disorders, death, pregnancy, AIDS, racism, rape, pedophilia. Shockingly, no quicksand.
Oh.
And usually, right? And usually featured yeah. our favorite characters in terrifying situations that scared the shit out of us and ended with heavy-handed moral lessons that served as a very valuable window into the social anxieties and dangers of the time. Now, I know little Michelle was terrified of these very special episodes, but she was also drawn to them like a moth to a freaking inferno. What about you guys?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And my memory is that there was oftentimes a huge advertising push with this kind of dun-dun-dun kind of mm-hmm. music. It got special treatment. And if it was a funny show, the announcer would be like, hey, this is not funny and you need to listen on Tuesday night at 7, right? There was just calling out for us. Like you said, moth to a flame.
And when we were sitting down with our families to watch these and then provide a launching pad for us to talk about some of these topics. No matter how kind of cringy they were sometimes, at mm-hmm. least we were sitting down watching together for the most part.
That was true. These were oftentimes episodes that our parents made us watch or wanted to watch with us. And you're like, why are both mom and dad watching Facts of Life with me? It might have been a little confusing. And sometimes they would let you know that if you had any questions, you can talk to them. You can ask them about anything, which of course was not true. And other times your parents said absolutely nothing, just hoping that that was implied, you know, just hoping that the TV show would do the job for them. And uh-huh. also, please don't ask questions.
Oh, for sure. And you know, my mom, as I have shared, was all over those episodes that got, you know, some billing of sit down with your child and talk about whether it was mm-hmm. the after school special, how babies are made, or, you know, the James at 15 that we talked about and, mm-hmm. You know, losing his virginity.
Well, but yet the these were very much yeah. after school specials at night mm-hmm. in primetime.
At night. Primetime after school specials.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it kind of was. Yeah.
Which was amazing how they could. And a lot of times do it in a 30-minute episode. I mean, we'll talk later. Some of these were two-parters. Mm-hmm. But oftentimes, you got all of this was accomplished in, well, really what amounts to probably, what, 22 minutes?
22 minutes. Mm-hmm. And sometimes crazy. They would even introduce, like, a disposable character to be the victim of the social trauma
likely,
of the day.
Yes.
And our main characters would be their saviors. And other times it would be your main characters who are suffering from the drama of the day. And you'd be like, that's weird. Blair wasn't a drug addict last week. mm-hmm. And it would only last the one episode. So right. you're like, yep, I'm a drug addict. I'm not a drug addict anymore. I was last week, but now I'm not.
Yeah.
22
she's,
minutes.
She's
it.
Fixed. Yeah.
She's fixed now. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's the legacy of the sitcom is you can fix anything in 22 minutes.
Exactly.
Even drug addiction.
You know what would have been brilliant is if somebody in like the mid 80s then, let's say 85, would have developed a sitcom that was just a therapist sitting and all the old characters from all the old shows were coming in.
Oh my
right?
gosh.
So maybe one episode, here comes Kimberly to talk about her eating disorder. And then the next one, oh, and here comes Arnold and Dudley because they did just seem to be fixed. And mm-hmm. you know that's
they
not
did.
Real life.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh.
That would have been brilliant. Actually, we should do yes. a funny YouTube series about
yes.
that. We're the therapists,
hilarious.
And we get
yes.
some of our friends to pretend to be, you know, Blair.
Well, that you do, or we can clip out
Sue-Ann.
Some of the some of the dialogue from the episodes. You know how they do yeah. that in some uh-huh. of these YouTube
yes.
videos? So you can have, you know, 2D coming in and then, like, talking. And she's
roller
talking to you, and then you could say, have a seat, 2D. And then you mm-hmm. can just act like the therapist. Can you imagine?
So my very first memory of a very special episode was Janet Jackson as Little Penny on Good Times. not only was it my first very special episode, it was also the first time I was introduced to the concept of a parent physically hurting their child as an issue. I just have these distinct memories of Penny holding her arm. Do you remember that? She's like holding her arm. Like her mom had either grabbed her or pushed her or something. And I was, my brain was bending. Like, wow, her mom? Her mom did that? I just couldn't wrap my brain around it at all.
Well, watching it again as an adult, I watched that a couple days ago, and not only was I impacted by the fact, again, like you just said, Kristen, like this was her mom, but this was Janet's first acting gig, okay? Mm-hmm. And there's some really scary scenes. There's the scene where you know her mother's going to burn her with an iron.
Yes,
and she, Jesus, and the mother, I remember that.
Locked the door so she couldn't run out. And so you just see Janet's face as you know the mother is approaching, and she had just like unplugged the iron and started to walk that way. And I just thought, on so many levels, one, that has to be traumatizing for Janet, and that to
for
be
Janet
your first
Jackson.
Acting experience. Whew, they just like threw her in the deep end.
I have like bad nipple lightning right now.
Oh, is there
yeah,
such a thing?
The bad, yeah, bad. I have yeah. a bad funny. Mm-hmm. I have a bad feeling in my tongue.
Yeah, that was.
And that her, just, her little face. Her, you're right. Her little. Her she little was so face. Good at that, showing the fear. And I remember how the doorknob was kind of at shoulder level, you know, when she was locked in, and how she's like, yes. I just remember that the door, like you said, the door was locked and funny.
It was creepy and eerie. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering now if they gave us a little heads up before that those episodes came on. I don't remember any like viewer discretion advised. Maybe they did.
I don't remember that in particular, but I do remember it as a topic, like we knew it was coming.
It was probably in the little promo ads and mm-hmm. the back when we had TV guides and they had mm-hmm. those hysterical sometimes promos where you'd be like, how can this makes sense. Like Janet Jackson abused by, you know, burned with an iron on the next. Good times.
Yeah, good times.
good times.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of the very first VSE, as we'll refer to it, I think a little bit during this episode, I was trying to remember what mine might have been. And as I was doing some research, looking back at what are considered the earliest very special episodes, and I realized, I think the very first one I saw was one that was referred to in a podcast I recently listened to called Mobituaries, the death of a very special episode. So if you haven't listened ever to the podcast Mobituaries, it's hysterical. And a CBS reporter basically reports on people and things that have just like disappeared. And he loves obituaries. Huh. So it's called Mobituaries. In this case, it's the very special episode. And he claims that the very first very special episode would have been an episode of Leave It to Beaver. And
no
I remember
way.
This episode, you guys. Okay. So it's in 1960, and the episode is titled The Drunk. And in this episode, Ward hires a neighbor who happens to be a drunk, a local handyman, who's going to be painting the house. And at one point in his painting, he asks Beaver if they might have a little, maybe, alcohol around. And he kind of describes to Beaver what that is. And Beaver said, oh, well, once my dad got this bottle in a brown bag from my uncle, and I know where it is. I think it's called brandy. And the guy said, oh, I'd love that. So basically, Beaver gives him the brandy, and then mom and dad find out because our painter gets intoxicated and Beaver gets in trouble.
Oh, Beaver.
Oh, my goodness. That can't be. But listen to this. Wally comes to his rescue, and I want you to hear what Wally says. And if this doesn't summarize what a very special episode is all about, I don't know what does.
You and mom shouldn't be scared to tell us things. Somebody's got to tell a guy about all the bad junk in the world.
Somebody's got to tell a guy about all the bad junk in the world.
That is Wally-esque. That is so Wally-esque. Mm-hmm.
And it's very much what I think a very special episode is all about, is talking to kids or presenting children with some of these dicey topics that maybe parents haven't talked to them about. Now, of course, we didn't see regular episodes of TV shows that were considered very special until I think we'll talk about in this episode, kind of the 70s into the 80s were their heyday. But one other episode of a TV show that we've actually talked about a little bit that is also considered a very special episode and very ahead of its time was the Bewitched episode on Christmas Eve of 1970. Now, if you remember, we talked about this episode. It had to do with racism. Listen to what Elizabeth Montgomery had to say right before the episode aired.
Hi, this is Elizabeth Montgomery. Welcome to Bewitched, next on ABC. Tonight's show was created in the true spirit of Christmas. The story was written by the 10th grade English class at Thomas Jefferson High School in Los Angeles. My friends at Oscar Mayer and Company and I feel it is a very special Bewitched, conceived in the image of innocence and filled with truth.
Basically, she's saying this is a very special episode and it's going to give you some stuff to think about. Wow. And I just was really, it just really struck me. These were two early TV shows that did kind of put some stuff out on the table for us to think about and talk about.
Yeah. And the hallmark being that these were comedies. These were comedies.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Well, almost every program had its share of very special episodes. There is one show that is considered the king, at least pre-Full House, and that is Different Strokes, which I think devoted about half its episodes to moral lessons. Because let's not forget, in the late 70s, having a show with kids as the central characters was still a relatively new idea. And so Different Strokes was able to use those kids as a teaching tool, right? Mm-hmm. So let's see if you remember any of these. There's the one where Willis moves in with a friend named Jerry who drives drunk and ends up in a coma. There's one where Arnold's buddies sip alcohol from a thermos at school and Arnold has to become like a 12-year-old substance abuse counselor. There's the one where Arnold and his friend Sam pal around with an epileptic street performer who has a seizure, resulting in kids making fun of her, resulting in Arnold and Sam schooling them on how to
that's
treat
just
people
that one
with
is I'm sorry that one is too much that's too much an that's too much like who came up
performer.
With that
I don't know. There's the one where Arnold is writing an article for the school paper and unearths a drug dealer in his investigation, which prompts Nancy Reagan to show up at school, as she does, to deliver her just say no message. What year do you think that one was?
That timing is excellent, Arnold.
I know. There's the one where Kimberly and Arnold decide to hitchhike home, but the man who picks them up tries to rape Kimberly and Arnold escapes.
Gosh.
But then the police have to hypnotize him so that he can tell them where she is.
Wait, police don't hypnotize. I don't think that's part of police work.
Well, and this is 23 minutes
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Some of these could have been two parts. I'm not sure. There's the one in the final season when best friend Sam is kidnapped by a man whose own son died, who then threatens to kill Mr. Drummond. That one sounds like that. Do you guys remember that Little House on the Prairie we talked about? Where the lady whose daughter drowned.
She
kidnaps Laura and puts her down in the, like, apple
in the basement.
Cellar.
Yeah. In the potato place.
Mm-hmm. Let's have Melissa Gilbert on our therapy show as our first patient. And then there is perhaps the most memorable, very special episode of them all. And I know this to be true, you guys, not just for me, but for most of our social media followers who we polled. And that is the two-part Different Strokes episode from 1983 entitled The Bicycle Man, where Arnold and Dudley are targeted by Mr. Horton, Gordon Jump. The friendly man, very friendly man, who owns the bicycle shop and feeds them pizza and wine and shows them adult cartoons in the back room because he wants to sexually abuse them.
Oh my God.
And so for personal reasons, I cannot have a discussion about this episode. Even watching it in 1983 was super triggering for me. And it's for that reason that we here at the Pop Culture Preservation Society will never be covering this episode in more detail than what I just gave you. But we would be remiss not to mention it, as we know many of you listening have feelings about this one. Do you guys?
And there's a big problem for me right away with Gordon Jump being the pedophile, because Gordon Jump was Mr. Carlson on WKRP. And I realize people are actors and they're playing roles, but Gordon Jump, you got to be careful. All I saw was Mr. Carlson. And it just it just didn't work. And you're right. No. It was too, there were some that were just too creepy and too triggering. This was one of them. Sylvia on Little House was another mm-hmm. that we're never going to talk about either, where it's just too much. And here, that yeah. is a lot of episodes from one show. It just wasn't on that long right. to have that
Well, that's
many.
Not even all of them. That's just oh a handful God. I chose to describe for you guys.
Those writers, I don't know what their agenda necessarily was, but I wanted to comment on that Bicycle Man episode because I was reading some comments on Reddit about that episode. And to your point, Kristen, about Gordon Jump, people, like to this day, if they just see a picture of him, there are some people that have a visceral response to just his face.
Raising my hand. Raising yeah. my wow. hand. Absolutely,
so
I do.
You were so right mm-hmm. about being so careful in maybe the rules that you choose and how that might impact, you know, your career. I'm not sure really mm-hmm. where his career went after that.
Casting matters. Remember in our TV movie episode, we talked, one of my most memorable TV movies was There's Something About Amelia. And they cast Ted Danson as the father who was sexually abusing his daughter. I always have that correlation between yeah. Ted Danson and that awful character and There's Something About Amelia.
And they're thinking of it as an acting role, and we're thinking of it as those are real people. Mm-hmm. And it's a story that we because we're just kids. And yes, we know they're actors, but still we have difficulty separating.
I will say that the Washington Post called that episode a calm, careful and intelligent treatment of a difficult and potentially traumatizing subject. There seems little possibility that watching this program would do children harm, and considerable likelihood it could do them good. And I disagree with that, Washington Post, because it can unearth a lot of buried memories. It can cause a lot of PTSD. It's very triggering. And so I don't know that I necessarily agree with the Washington Post.
Let's disagree with the Washington Post. And at the same time, you know, we didn't have the research then that we do now about trauma and how you carry right. it with you. And so they're looking at it on the surface level as people who have no trauma.
Mm-hmm. Well, think about any kids who were physically abused by their parent watching that episode of Good Times. Mm-hmm. Like, even if they were watching it as a 35-year-old.
Yeah.
You mm-hmm. know, that's so triggering. The Washington Post did say that they thought the Bicycle Man could perhaps do some good. And listen to this. Obviously, the purpose of a very special episode is to raise awareness of an issue. And like most of the episodes do, with a voiceover or an appearance by one of the stars, to encourage those affected to seek help if necessary. Mm-hmm. And in the same year The Bicycle Man was released, which was 1983, a child in LaPorte, Indiana, informed his mother of a pedophile in the area, and the LaPorte Police Department credited this Different Strokes episode for the man's arrest. So there you go, right?
Yeah, I guess the writers are probably saying if we save one kid, it's worth it. And that person likely abused more than one kid. So, yeah,
well, and okay. also right. going back to There's Something About Amelia, I remember the research I did for that was absolutely there were so many phone calls
to the helpline
by kids to the mm-hmm. hotline mm-hmm. number that they gave.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And there's no doubt that this episode gave parents a way to have this discussion with their kids. Yeah. It's probably mm-hmm. not something you would have just sat down at a kitchen table on a Tuesday night without any reference and said, "Hey, Joey, I have something I want to talk about with you."
Apropos of nothing.
Exactly. Yes. Mm-hmm. So yeah. to have these shows to refer to in a conversation, I think, would be helpful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or it's the inspiration to do something, to say right. something. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So even though Different Strokes certainly cornered the market on the very special episode, these episodes didn't always have to do with kids being in dicey situations, right?
No, that is absolutely true. In fact, one of the most memorable very special episodes for me and for a lot of people was a 1977 episode of All in the Family called Edith's 50th Birthday. I mean, let's just think about that for a minute. How old was Edith?
Oh, God.
And how far past our 50th birthdays are we? And mm-hmm. on her 50th birthday, that was 1977. That's long past when we started watching All in the Family. Okay, so just get that in your head. Okay, so it's called Edith's 50th Birthday. When Edith answers the door to who she thinks is a police officer, but instead turns out to be a serial rapist, and he attacks Edith. It's pretty graphic, not with nudity, but with the real violence that actually takes place. Yeah. And truthfully, I probably couldn't watch it today. I remember tuning into that episode. It was, of course, highly advertised, like they are, and I was scared watching it, and I was very sympathetic. But it also exposed my ignorance about what rape is, because I couldn't figure out why Edith was his target. She was a 50-year-old woman, not a supermodel. And to me, in my child brain, it didn't add up. And they didn't really explain that part of it, that rape is an act of violence. It's not an act of sexual attraction. I mean, not in my memory. I don't remember them doing that in the episode. Or either that or it just went right over my head. And the other memorable thing about that episode was how Edith fought him off. Edith, of course, was the endearing numbskull who deferred to her domineering husband. And Edith kicked this guy's ass. She fought hard and she outsmarted him. And you, as the viewer, you were so proud of her. And the audience felt like they got to know Edith a little bit better that day. And it elicited one of the biggest and loudest audience responses in the history of the show. In 2017, Norman Lear, who was the creator of the show, he just died last year. He was over 100. I think he was 101. Mm-hmm. He just died. So in 2017, he was asked to recall the biggest audience uproar from the show's run. And he said, "I never heard a bigger sound on television than when Edith got away from the guy who was attempting to rape her. That was an explosion."
I'm just sitting here wondering what prompts the writers to write that. Now, when we are talking about the ones with kids, mm-hmm. we're understanding, and like I'll talk in just a little bit, there was a huge influx of very special episodes about eating disorders because this was a very real reflection of what was happening in our country and how people were starting to talk about it more. And with kids too, putting them in situations where there might be a friend drinking or having to deal with a friend's death or something like that. That is so disturbing. That what you just described to me is so disturbing. And what did something happen? Did one of the writers come and maybe it happened to them and they're like, we should put Edith in this to show so we can show that it can happen? Yeah. I don't know about it. Can't be apropos of nothing.
It absolutely is not apropos of nothing. There has to be a reason. I don't have the information about Edith's episode, but let's not forget Edith's cousin, Maud, who starred in her own very special episode in a special to be continued in which she learns that she is pregnant at the age of 47. I'll tell you where this came from in just a second. So Maud struggles with the decision of whether or not she should get an abortion. And in the second part of that episode, she does indeed decide to terminate the pregnancy. So this aired in November of 1972 on CBS. Roe versus Wade had just passed in January of 1972. So this show is about legal abortion. The show was really trying to humanize the weight of this very real decision-making situation. They wanted to show the human act of grappling with it because this thing, this 47-year-old quasi, you know, perimenopausal woman being pregnant, that happened to millions of people every single day, and yet no one was talking about it. It was always shrouded in secrecy. People only thought of abortion in terms of teen moms or hussies. Of course, that being a myth, right? That's just something that
a lot of people still do, Kristen.
Yes, people think
sadly.
I don't even know what to say about that. Anyway, Maud's daughter, Carol, played by Adrienne Barbeau, classmate of my mom, she is an adult. And she has children of her own. So in other words, Maud is a grandmother. She's a pregnant grandmother. And Carol is encouraging Maud to terminate the pregnancy. So when it first aired, it got a huge audience and just a small amount of protest. But when it reran that summer, 39 stations refused to air it and actually ran it and they ran it without ads because all of their sponsors backed out. This tells me that there was an organized effort. This was not the feeling of the country per se. It was an organized effort. So Norman Lear said, actually, I think it was Norman Lear. He says, the funny thing is, this is when you were asking, where do these come from? He said, the funny thing is that initially we weren't even thinking about abortion. There was a group called Zero Population Growth, and they announced that they were giving a $10,000 prize for comedies that had something to do with controlling population. So everyone came in with their ideas about vasectomies. So initially, this was supposed to be an episode about Walter, Maud's husband, getting a vasectomy. But the storyline grew, and with it, the impact. It became something much greater than Walter getting a vasectomy.
Yeah, wow. I want to comment on this episode because obviously I was seven, so mm-hmm. I'm not sitting down to watch Maud. But I do have distinct memories of this episode because Lillian was all over it. And let's just say it was not because she was excited to watch it. Uh-huh. And so I actually talked to her about it because I said, Mom, I know that this was a big deal, but I also know I didn't sit down and watch it. And I know in my body it has a feeling of this is really bad. And I said, I'm guessing I overheard you talking about it. And she has memories. She said, oh, yeah, like you probably heard it at church. Like she remembers the priest on the altar, you know, giving a sermon about it. And she remembers walking out with her best friend, who happened to be our next door neighbor, and saying something like, they don't need to be, you know, telling us not to watch it. We're not going to watch it. They need to be telling, you know, the world not to watch it. And now, listeners, this is not at all what she thinks. And when we had this discussion, she was
this
like,
was a long
wow,
time ago.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just think how I have evolved. But all I know is that it got Lillian worked up. And wow. Carolyn was going to like avoid anything that gets Lillian worked up. And she was worked up. So I think between church and probably her Catholic mm-hmm. Reporter newspaper, that might have been the groups that, you know,
yeah, that organized.
Said, exactly, mm-hmm. that organized and mm-hmm. said, this is not a good thing. We're not talking about this. They were probably reeling, sadly, from the Roe v. Wade decision, mm-hmm. which if you watch this episode again, it really hurts your heart, to be honest, because in a way they're celebrating. Adrienne Barbeau has a line where she's like, Mom, this isn't your abortion when it was unsafe. That's not what it is now. Like, it's mm-hmm. legal. And I just was sad.
It made you sad for right now.
Yeah, for right now, to think this was 1972 mm-hmm. and we're celebrating the fact that women were given a right to choose and Maud is having to make this choice, and Adrienne Barbeau telling her it's okay now. You know, you don't have to worry about it being unsafe. And
you were a small child. Think
I
about
was.
That,
I
Carolyn.
Was seven.
You were a small child, and here you are. Now we're old ladies, and mm-hmm. how far backward have we flipped? It's really we need Maud back. Oh, but Bea Arthur has died, hasn't she?
Mm. She can't come to our.
But Adrienne Barbeau, we could have Adrienne Barbeau do something.
Yeah, that'd be good. Mm-hmm. Wait, maybe it's your mom. I swear someone else knows her. Does your mom keep in touch with her?
No, not at all. In fact, I don't think they were in the same class. I think she was just a beautiful girl, so my mom knew her.
Oh, okay. No, in my story, they were good friends. Oh. And they'd go over to each other's houses you know, put makeup on each other and talk about boys.
Mm-hmm. No, Linda, they were not that good. Hello, listeners. Today's episode is brought to you by Armoire, the clothing rental and return company that Carolyn and Michelle and I have been using for just a little over 6 months now. Armoire makes getting dressed easy and a lot more fun. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, you can build a more exciting wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz, select items you like, and the clothes show up at your door in just 2 days. Then, when you're ready for something different, just swap them out for more new-to-you styles. In the past, I've fallen victim to the fast fashion addiction. It truly is an addiction, grabbing that cute t-shirt off the rack as I walk by with my cart, because it's only $10. But we all know what happens. That $10 t-shirt goes in the giveaway pile 6 months later because it now looks like a dish rag. Armoire allows me to indulge in higher quality materials that look so much better, and they feel better too. Armoire also allows me to take some risks and maybe try out a style I wouldn't normally commit to, because I don't have to commit to it. I borrow it, try it out, see how I feel, and send it back. Right now, our listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month. That's up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/PCPS. That's armoire.style, armoire.style/PCPS to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again.
Hey, listeners, it's Carolyn, and I wanted to check in
It's 2025, you guys. How's everybody feeling? Well, I know for me, sometimes all of these hormonal changes that many of us are going through can be a real pain. And while there are natural hormonal changes that are going on through our bodies, did you know that there are also more than 1,000 hormone disruptors living rent-free in our environment right now? Yes, disruptors that can affect actually how our hormones function. They're in our food, our water, the air we breathe, the clothes we wear, our skincare. And they all mess with our hormones. The good news is that we don't have to suffer through all of this anymore because now there's Hormone Harmony. And you've heard me talk about it. It's a formula made only with herbal ingredients that are shown to reduce hormonal symptoms in women of all ages. You've heard me talk about how that menopause-induced brain fog has really messed with me at times, but I've really noticed a difference since I've taken Hormone Harmony, and even my sleep habits have gotten better. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is truly dedicated to making women's lives easier, and that means they only use science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromise when it comes to quality, and we are so excited to partner with Hormone Harmony. And for a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code PCPS at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code PCPS for 15% off today.
I'm just sitting here thinking back to when I was saying what would make the writers, you know, do come up with, write the episode about Edith, or now there's this one. And I'm thinking, mm-hmm. because like I said, there weren't, at this time, there weren't a ton of shows where the kids were the central characters. There was a handful, but not a ton. And goodness gracious, Little House on the Prairie, starting in 1974, certainly gave us, put mm-hmm. those kids in a lot mm-hmm. of very special situations. But actually, it's so smart, isn't it? Because these are issues that women were facing that nobody was talking about then.
That's right.
So like mm-hmm. all good art should do, it should prompt a discussion, some disagreement, a debate. And my goodness, this was the early 70s. And mm-hmm. I mean, I just have to really applaud those writers and the producers for allowing all of this to be on the air.
It is making people talk.
These are
Absolutely.
Definitely things that women, mm-hmm. not all women, these are because, you know, we've got the women's lib movement too, but
right.
a lot of women still in early 1970s couldn't freely talk about.
Absolutely
right?
not.
I mean, mm-hmm. think about
or
think
worry
about my
out
mom.
Loud about worry right. out loud right. about opening the door and getting raped.
Right.
Yeah.
That's exactly. that's a taboo subject for a lot of people. So mm-hmm. it really was genius of them to do
well,
that.
Well, Norman Lear, I mean, I think we just have so much gratitude. I think we should have so much gratitude mm-hmm. for what he did. I mean, really, it started with, you know, All in the Family and those topics that they discussed, everything from, you know, homosexuality, the racism, the anti-Semitism. There was a lot. And I was, mm-hmm. it was interesting, again, doing my research, I read about when it had to change its time slot because the government kind of cracked down on the, you know, 7 to 9 was the family time. And so mm-hmm. you couldn't have certain subject matter shows airing during that time. And the cast members of All in the Family did a parody song about what this message was sending to the network.
You can show my pregnancy.
And John Boy can have VD. Plus a quick vasectomy.
After 9 o'clock.
Our next episode that I want to talk about isn't really controversial, but it, boy, oh boy, was a very special episode. This would be the Laverne and Shirley episode where Laverne loses her boyfriend, called Why Did the Fireman? The guest star of this episode is Ted Danson. He plays Laverne's firefighting boyfriend who sadly perishes in a fire.
That just seems so serious for Laverne and Shirley.
Is. And you guys.
I know.
Oh, my God.
But tackling death, right? Like
yes,
tackling,
right.
Mm-hmm. Trying to maybe model how we process
and
it.
And it did. Right? I want to share a few things I found interesting as I was doing research on this. Because, again, this is, I can't say this enough, if you haven't already gathered, the short amount of time that these writers have to get this message across
on a sitcom. So you know there's going to have to be some laughs, and they're going to have to be strategically placed so they're not too cringy. And the first almost half of this episode is indeed that. It's kind of funny. It's Laverne. It's a very Laverne-centric episode because we go from her meeting and falling in love with Ted Danson to he's about to propose to her. So we know he's going to ask her to marry him. A few, like several months go by in this 122-minute episode, which is, again, amazing. And they do it so well that you're not, like, feeling that this is, like, whiplash or that doesn't make any sense.
Was there a musical montage of them, like, getting ice cream together and walking in the park?
There probably was. Here's the deal, you guys.
Fonzie and Pinky.
Fonzie and Pinky.
I've got to say, I searched high and low for this Laverne and Shirley episode on all the internets. I mean, on all the places. Nowhere.
I can't find every single other episode of
Laverne and Shirley. I could not find this one. Yeah. So I just was going a little bit by memory, but mostly by stuff that I had read about the episode.
That's very spooky, actually.
Yeah. Isn't it? Mm-hmm. I'd love to know if anyone knows why that's the case. I would love to know it. But so anyway, we do get this. There's probably a musical montage. I don't know. I could totally see it. I could totally see them drinking milk and Pepsi
if it's months in advance. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And so we, as the viewers, know that he is going to propose to her, but she doesn't know that yet. And of course, right before it's going to happen, there's a fire. And Ted goes in and saves a family, but dies in the process. And this is going to sound funny, but it wasn't funny in the episode. It was very serious. Because Lenny and Squiggy are volunteer firemen, and they have to.
I know we're not supposed to laugh.
I know, but they have to deliver the news to Laverne.
Can you imagine?
Lenny and Squiggy?
I know. So it might just be one of their very only or very few dramatic moments in that series because they pull it off.
Well, I was about to say, which makes it more impactful in my mind now. Again, I have no memory of this episode, but loved Laverne and Shirley. So imagining Lenny and Squiggy having to then wear their heart outside, right? Because they're usually just so jokey. And
not go for the joke.
I can see them, though, being very earnest and very very sensitive in telling her this. And that makes it even more impactful for the viewer, I think.
Well, yes. Right. And that's where it kind of flips in terms of, you know, the feeling of the episode. It's been kind of lighthearted and fun, and we're excited for Laverne. Then we know about this fire happening. And then Lenny and Squiggy, who, you know, 100 or 99% of the time, they're going to make us laugh with something goofy. They present the message. So it's this transition from, you know, this happy-go-lucky part of the episode to this somber, melancholy part. And they're the ones who kind of flip it. And from then on, it's a pretty serious episode, very, very sad. Penny Marshall has said it's her favorite episode of Laverne and Shirley that she did. And it gave permission for the show and the viewers to kind of, there weren't a whole lot of shows talking about grief and mourning because Laverne, her whole attitude towards Ted Danson's death was, if she doesn't acknowledge it, it didn't happen. Like, he's just out there somewhere doing his job. He's still here as long as she never says he's dead. And one of the most impactful scenes maybe ever in Laverne and Shirley comes when Mr. DeFazio, do you guys remember Mr.
Yes.
DeFazio?
Mm-hmm.
They actually address the death of Laverne's mother. It's rarely talked about in the entire series, but in this episode it is. And he tells her that grief never, ever goes away. It's never going to completely leave you, but you can move on. And then she kind of accepts this, and that's kind of the end of the episode. And we know that she's
going to move on.
We're going to move on.
Next week is going to be funny.
Yes. And I read a couple of comments about this episode that I thought were kind of, again, what these very special episodes are meant to do. It said, community can be built on grief. And with 30 million viewers watching, maybe people felt less alone, knowing that someone else had been touched by the unthinkable. And that you had, again, this springboard to talk about. Like, you could say, did anyone watch Laverne and Shirley last night? Oh, I know how she felt. And you could have the conversations, and you didn't feel alone. And I think that's pretty powerful.
Well, and it's because, like I said earlier at the beginning of the episode, we felt either raised by these families, or we felt like they were our friends, or they were our parents, or whatever. So someone who sees Laverne going through that, and maybe they've just lost someone, and they see that, they feel like they almost, you know, they have a partner in this, this grief journey. And it makes it all just seem more okay. I don't know about okay. I mean, that's relative, right? Who's really okay. Well, but it makes you feel seen. I mean, certainly even the children ones, even the children ones. I mean, my goodness gracious, you know, you can be triggered by the bicycle man, but you could also see it as, oh, I'm not alone and this happened to me, right?
Right.
Or a little Penny, it could be the first time that somebody realized that it's not okay for them to be treated that way and that maybe they should tell a trusted adult. I think that's the point.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, Schlemiel, Schlemazel, Hasenbemp Incorporated. Another very special episode that did an incredible job of being funny and lighthearted for the beginning and then taking a hard turn, but we never felt like it was whiplash or anything, was the episode of WKRP in Cincinnati that aired on February 11th, 1980, and it was titled In Concert. In this episode, we get the reaction of the radio station staff after a terrible tragedy has happened at a concert where most of the employees of the radio station were actually at in some way, shape, or form. So we know it's a big deal, and we hear them saying about what time they have to get there and that it's general admission, and this is the route you should take to avoid all the traffic. So we get the feeling that this is a big deal and a lot of people are going to be there. Well, the episode is actually based on a huge concert that was happening in Cincinnati on December the 3rd, 1979, when The Who was in concert in Cincinnati. And they were playing Riverfront Coliseum. Almost 20,000 tickets were sold for that event. The episode mimics what happened in real life on December the 3rd, when thousands of people packed themselves up to the entrance, and when the doors were finally opened on the west side of the Coliseum, that was one of the issues, not all the doors opened, people rushed the gates, and people were crushed. 11 people died, and 23 others were injured.
Oh, my God.
Huge, huge event. And I vaguely remember this on my radar as a kid when this happened, 1979. And the writers knew that they needed to address this issue. I mean, they're a radio station in Cincinnati. So they want to write about it. The producers on the network are a little bit like, it's too soon, can't do it. They insist. And so the episode does indeed get made and airs in February. So this is just a few months after it happens. And the second half of the episode, once we all know people are going to the concert, we kind of go to commercial and you can just tell there is a whole different feel to the screen, like watching the faces of the characters, and they're slowly learning about what had happened the night before and how people had died. And Les Nessman has to cover the story, and it's heartbreaking. And Mr. Carlson is feeling very guilty that the radio station promoted the event and that they gave away free tickets. So he is grappling with all of that. They're all dealing with it in their own ways, but super, super sad. And the very end of the episode, you get Venus Flytrap playing this gentle jazz number called Remembering the Rain by Bill Evans. And just as he starts to play it, Mr. Carlson walks into the studio and kind of shares that he feels guilty, but that it's important that the radio station does some things, voices their concerns to make sure this doesn't ever happen again.
Well, eating disorders was a big topic of these very special episodes in the late 70s and throughout the 80s, which was surely a reflection of the times. Anorexia and bulimia was suddenly getting the airtime it really hadn't before as society started to address these dangers publicly. Remember the TV movie, The Best Little Girl in the World in 1981 with Jennifer Jason Leigh? So all of a sudden, it's becoming just more acceptable to talk about it.
Or recognizing that we needed to be aware. Yeah, maybe the death of Karen Carpenter started it all.
That just that this is something that we need to address publicly. And certainly with young girls. So there is another Different Strokes episode, shockingly, titled Bulimia, where Kimberly struggled with an eating disorder with bulimia, just like Dana Plato, the actress who played Kimberly, actually did. In fact, this would be her final episode. It was January 17th of 1986.
Do we know if her bulimia ran concurrently with the episode? Is there, were they?
I read that the episode was written almost like in reaction to her own eating disorder. I don't know if that's the reason that she left. Yeah. Mm-hmm. In season one of The Facts of Life, and let's not forget, The Facts of Life is a spinoff of Different Strokes. And I would argue that The Facts of Life has almost as many very special episodes as Different Strokes. But in season one, you guys, this is in March of 1980. There's an episode called Dieting where Blair sets up Sue Ann, who was only on for one season. I loved Sue Ann with the long blonde curly hair.
Isn't she Jeff Probst's wife?
In real life, her name's Julie Pierkarski. I don't know if she's.
I read that
she married a dentist.
Oh, I don't know.
Did she? Maybe she divorced a dentist and married.
We better Google
Jeff
that. Let's
fact check.
We need to know that right now.
Fact check. Anyway, Blair sets up Sue Ann on a date with a popular rich boy. And then teases her about being a chubbo.
He sounds heavy duty. Not any more heavy duty than you, dear. If I were you, I'd lose some of that. Every girl I've ever seen Scott with looks like she's right out of Vogue. Go ahead. Keep shoveling it in. You know, you're in running for Chubette of the Year yourself, Blair. We'll see who the porker is.
The intense pressure to be thin causes Sue Ann to go on a starvation diet and pass out. And you guys, the body shaming in this episode is intense and it's constant by every character, Mrs. Garrett included. It's pretty much impossible to watch today. Like, wow, you can't. I like literally just halfway through, I just was like, stop. I need to go like buy celery for dinner. I don't know.
It's probably the number one of all of the things that TV shows don't and can't do anymore. It's one of the hallmarks of the change in our culture is poking fun at fat people. It was definitely okay to poke fun at fat people, to call people chubby. And then, of course, the lazy joke is the fat person who eats and eats and eats and eats, which all of us who have eating disorders of one kind or struggle with obesity, nobody does that.
Mm-mm.
Nobody eats in front of people like the way they depict fat people eating on TV in the 70s and the 80s. That's
the beginning
over.
Of
That's
that episode.
Gone.
Sue Ann comes walking down the stairs with a big old, like just walking down the stairs at the same time she's eating a big old piece of cake.
Oh, of course. You know? Of course. It's so lazy.
It's like a silent message. If you eat cake, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Look what's going to happen, kids, if you eat cake. So horrible. So some other ones I wanted to mention on The Facts of Life, because like I said, it was also ripe with very special episodes. Do you remember Cynthia, who beat Blair for class president and then OD'd on pills?
That was in season two,
I think.
And that's Tootie, a word that we don't use anymore either. Like we would talk about pills.
Pills.
Yeah, now we would say pills. A specific thing. They OD'd on, it was a fentanyl overdose or something. But now they
would even say
pills.
Drugs. Pills is like a
right,
word.
Pills.
You can't really
no, pills.
Say it
popping
anymore.
Pills.
No.
Remember?
Right.
Popping pills. She was popping.
Right.
Cynthia was popping pills. Or do you remember when Tootie secretly went to New York City and almost got trafficked? At the diner, the guy was like sex. She didn't though. Or when Natalie, I forgot about this. And you guys, I don't think I watched, it then. I was a huge Facts of Life fan, but the very last seasons, like when they have like the gift store and George Clooney's the handyman and, Phyllis is on it with Mackenzie Astin? I watched it sporadically. I think I was in college by then. So I don't remember this, but I think this is brilliant. Natalie loses her virginity willingly to her boyfriend, Snake, who's, Damone from Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Now, what I love about this, so I just read this. I haven't watched it, and I should try to find it. I love, though, that they wrote Natalie willingly losing her virginity. Like, I guess everyone else is like, oh, did he pressure you? Did he force himself on you? And she's like, no, I wanted to. Like, just showing, and I know this could be very controversial, and even to some of you listening now, but I'm just going to go on record saying, I appreciate that they're showing Natalie as having, agency over her sexuality and over her choice, right?
Embracing her pleasure.
And he was her boyfriend. Now, we do find out, I think Snake was kind of a snake, basically, like kind of a dud. But that was, I guess, lots of backlash from sponsors and from People that all of a sudden, little Natalie from Facts of Life is going to do it.
And I love that it's Natalie too, because it just shows that, because they didn't choose the supermodel one. It wasn't Blair. Mm-hmm. They chose the regular person, because guess what? Regular people have sex. And teenagers have sex. As much as nobody and wants them to, they do.
But and teenagers want to, and they can make a choice, you know, based on their own, you know, morals or whatever. Desires, I should say. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, as the 80s went on, we had very special episodes, a lot more very special episodes dealing with eating disorders. I mean, Growing Pains, Blossom, Saved by the Bell. I think Full House had like 12 or 28 episodes dealing with eating. No, but it did have a very memorable one where DJ wants to look good in a bathing suit. So she quits eating and passes out after running at like speed 10 on the treadmill. Oh my God.
And let's not forget that sometimes the very special episode was about celebrating something instead of warning you about something. And this is where the Golden Girls come into play. I think the Golden Girls could have single-handedly taught the world that gay people exist.
And that's why so many gay people love the Golden Girls, probably.
Yes, probably. And for a long time, I knew that the Golden Girls had a cult following in the gay community, but I thought it was because of the camp, not intentional camp, but the kind of very comforting camp that you can only get on the lanai. But now I see that there was a continuous thread of acknowledgement and acceptance in several very special episodes, not just one, but many. There's the episode called Isn't It Romantic, where Dorothy has some good friends who are roommates. Didn't every grandma have some good friends who had been roommates for 30 years? And you're like, Grandma, they're not roommates. And Grandma's like, of course they are.
They're best friends. I mean, but they're Bert and
Ernie. Best friends for 30 years. Well, Rose is your grandma. And when one of the roommates dies, Rose befriends and comforts the grieving woman, except that the roommate starts to fall in love with Rose. And that's when Rose wakes up and smells the coffee. But the reason this is a very special episode is because Rose is such a kind and caring person. This isn't a punchline. Oh my God, she's falling in love with Rose. It's not a punchline. It's an opportunity to see another human being with very human feelings. In there's another episode called Scared Straight, in which Rose strikes again when Blanche's brother Clayton confesses to her, not Blanche, that he is gay. And this forces a coming out story that allows Blanche to be the angry, confused family member and Rose to be the therapist who guides everyone through to acceptance. And then Clayton comes back in Sister of the Bride, an episode called Sister of the Bride, except now he's engaged to a man and he's asking for Blanche's blessing. More confusion and conflict with Blanche, and also more opportunities for resolution and acceptance. But this is the big one, an episode called 72 Hours. They address the AIDS crisis by giving Rose an HIV scare after a blood transfusion. If you want people to care about a cure for HIV and AIDS, give it to Rose Nyland. That'll perk people up. They're like, not Betty White, no. Mm-mm. And this had a huge, huge impact. Think these little old ladies. These little old ladies did so much good work.
Well, and that's such a great one for education, too, for the older women who might, you know, older women not either not part of the gay community or not accepting of it, but love the Golden Girls.
Yes.
Love Rose. So when they see Rose put in this very real situation that could happen, I bet it made them think a little bit.
I have to imagine, because my parents were huge fans of the Golden Girls, and they were, I was going to say they're Puritans. They're not Puritans, but they're, and they're not conservative either. But, you know, socially maybe a little conservative. And I have to believe that the Golden Girls has contributed to how they approach people in the gay community today, which is with an open and loving heart.
Well, and I was thinking about, and I was specifically thinking about, you know, the very real threat and fear of having a blood transfusion. And that's what's, you know, a lot of older people were going through that at the time. And there was a lot of misinformation out there. Yeah. There was a lot of ignorance. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of, this is the only way you can get AIDS, especially people that weren't accepting of the gay community. And so to see Rose going through that, that very real scare as a result of a situation that they could be in.
Yes, absolutely.
I think it that was brilliant of the writers.
Yeah.
100%. And I think, you know, AIDS just wasn't talked about at all. I mean, it was like taboo subject. So much misinformation was out there, from, you know, how you contracted it to how you could pass it on. There's also an episode of a TV program called Mr. Belvedere. I did not watch that, but it has a very special episode that deals with a young boy. So like a student in one of the main characters' classes who got AIDS from a blood transfusion. And this is along the same time as we have the Ryan White issue going on in Kokomo, Indiana, because they play out the storyline in Mr. Belvedere of this boy, like the parents don't want any of their kids standing near him or being near him. And it's out of the mouths of babes where one of the children actors says, you know, there's nothing wrong with him. He can't give it to us. Like, we're going to stand with him. And, you know, they stand all next to each other and hold hands and that kind of thing. So in that case, yeah, these very special episodes can really make an impact. And if
they can,
It's amazing that that is a real information source then. If those children are saying those truths about how you can and cannot contract HIV, that is an information source.
Yes.
It's not the idiot box.
And you're always still going to have people who are like, oh, that's ridiculous, you know.
Sure.
I would never let my kids stand. I mean, you're still going to have that, but it's sort of like if you reach, you know, like I talked about with the Bicycle Man and how that one pedophile was caught, or the Ted Danson movie and how so many kids called the hotline. If that Mr. Belvedere episode or the Golden Girls episode helped educate just a small handful of people in a different way, then it's worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It gets it on people's radar as something you can talk about. It's not as taboo. So the more people that are talking about it, the less chance for misinformation. I mean, there's more of an opportunity to educate people.
Thank you for being a friend. Travel down the road and back again. Your heart is true. You're a pal and a confidant.
Well, as it is apparent from our discussion, there were so many of these very special episodes, and they have really found their place in pop culture. The VSE was a cultural phenomenon, and it has become a TV trope. It's been parodied in everything from Family Guy to The Simpsons. There's an entire YouTube Funny or Die series where these VSEs are revisited in humorous ways. There's, you know, one-liners in lots of TV shows, and we all know what they're referring to. I mean, you can just say VSE, and we know what they're referring to. But again, probably the Gen Xers know what they're referring to, because this was a time in history that these were a thing. And then, as we said earlier, they just kind of disappeared. One of the theories as to why they disappeared is because of Larry David and because of Seinfeld.
Oh, my God.
And what I find interesting is a lot of these shows we just mentioned, the shows that had a bunch of very special episodes. We're talking Family Ties, Facts of Life, Different Strokes, Punky Brewster, Golden Girls, Blossom. These were all NBC shows. You know, I love my networks.
Oh.
And now Larry David and Seinfeld are coming along, also an NBC sitcom. And he was so strongly against those kind of episodes that there was a motto of the writers and the cast all during that series airing, and it was no hugging, no learning. That was had to be like every script had to make sure there was no hugging and no learning.
There's no resolution. It's true. If you think about Seinfeld episodes, there was no resolution.
No, we're not going to learn a lesson at the end at all. Mm-mm. We're just going to have this moment in life.
No moral compass.
On. So Larry David and Seinfeld actually might be the actual reason that
that's so funny.
These episodes died away.
I think it's interesting. This season, we've sort of had a very unintentional theme, and that is that the 70s and the 80s cared deeply about making us informed and responsible and caring and compassionate citizens. We started with our episode on PSAs, teaching us about everything from littering to drug abuse to flying your kite around electrical substations. Then there was our James at 15 episode, which was all about helping teens navigate all the landmines that come with adolescence, including sex and drugs and drinking and cults. And then today we're examining what are really 22-minute public service announcements, all of which were intended to show us something difficult and help us make better choices, essentially. I don't care how ham-handed these were. Their intentions were quite lovely. because just like Whitney Houston, they believed that children were our future and teach them well and all that, right? The electric babysitter really was taking care of us. And if you think we're done celebrating this very Gen X-themed phenomenon, we're not. Because next week, the three of us will each take one very special episode that left a mark on us personally and walk you through all the awkward tutelage they provided for our developing minds. Thank you so much for listening today, and we will see you for more very special episodes next week.
I know. I wonder which one we're all going to pick. You have to come back next week to find out. And we want to give a huge shout out to our amazing Patreon supporters. Your contributions at all levels of membership directly help us create this podcast and keep it and this whole society trucking. And today we're giving a special shout out to patrons Leanne, Karen, Robert, Cindy, Colette, Susan, Charles, Emily, Mindell, Mindell? Is it Mindell? Mindell.
How do you
Let
say
it? Let us know.
How is it spelled?
M-E-N-D-A-L. Mindell.
I'd say Mindell.
Yeah. Julie, Sherry, Megan, Linda, Jill, Erica, Mel, Stephanie, Colleen, Mike, and J.S.
And don't forget, another way that you can support us is by sharing the podcast with friends and also by leaving reviews. You can go on Apple Podcasts and give us 5 stars because that's what we want. And if you don't want to give us 5, just move along.
Just keep on trucking.
Yeah, keep on trucking. You can also leave a review, and those really help us to be seen by more folks and helps with the little fun algorithm. So head on over to your podcast platform and give us a good review.
In the meantime, let's raise our glasses for a toast, courtesy of the cast of Three's Company. 2 good times.
2 happy days.
2 Little House on the Prairie.
The information, opinions, and comments expressed on the Pop Culture Preservation Society podcast belong solely to Carolyn, the Crushologist, and Hello Newman, and are in no way representative of our employers or affiliates. And though we truly believe we are always right, there is always a first time. The PCPS is written, produced, and recorded in Minneapolis, Minnesota, home of the fictional WJM Studios and our beloved Mary Richards. Nanu Nanu, keep on trucking, and may the force be with you.